This week on Creator Upload, are audio influencers now a thing? Is Logan Paul a business genius? And musicians are going to start loving Facebook.
Welcome to Creator Upload, your creator economy podcast. I am Lauren Schnipper.
And I'm Joshua Cohen. Lauren.
Yo.
For how many hours did you tune into the Logan Paul Pokemon box break last weekend?
Approximately 10 seconds about an hour ago.
It's an unquantifiable amount because it's actually 0 hours, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I know. And in preparation for our podcast, I just was like, what? Oh, yeah, no, I'm good. That's what I did.
I'm quickly turning into a big Logan Paul stan, at least from a business perspective. I know.
Respect. No, respect. I get it.
So he paid $2 million for six boxes. So he approximately paid some $300,000 per box of these new Pokemon cards that...
Right. So these Pokemon boxes, the ones he did, the most valuable ones, these cards.
Yeah. So they're new to him. They're not new to Pokemon. They're from their original base set from a couple decades ago. And so he bought the first edition unopened box that he then did this live unboxing for. So he bought each box for around like somewhere between 300 and 400 grand. And then he sold each pack in the box. There's 36 packs. Each pack in the box on this auction site. Golden Auctions, which he has invested in too.
He's invested in, I heard that.
And then he had the CEO of Golden Auctions on his box break live stream as well.
Sure.
And then he auctioned off each pack for an average price of around $39,000, which equals up to $1.4 million in total sales. So he made close to $1 million, a little bit less if you take into probably whatever percentage Golden takes from that. But just on this, it's crazy. I mean, no one would have thought you could sell one of these for $1.4 million. He just basically did and created this really entertaining live stream too.
And they become more valuable because he is opening them. Because normally collectibles, it's like when you don't open them, they retain their value. But I guess because Logan Paul is opening it. But also, like,
there's just lots of idiosyncrasies that go into that, right? So, if you get a big card and that big card is in pristine condition, like he pulled two Charizard cards, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. And they are, if they're both graded like a PSA 10, they could be worth in of themselves several hundred thousand dollars and potentially way more in the not so distant future. But some unopened packs retain more of their value if they're unopened, like if they had all common cards in there, cards that weren't sought after. It's obviously worth more as an unopened pack because then the cards are less valuable than the 39K someone would have bought it for at auction.
And how does this relate to NFTs? Because NFTs are not physical goods.
So he just sold NFTs as a component of all of this. So he sold originally like $5.7 million worth of NFTs in the lead up to this. And then he sold another around $800,000 worth of NFTs to commemorate this event. It's just something that he must have been planning at least a little bit ahead of time in order to make it happen in this time frame and happen for the box break that happened last weekend. But it was just more of a cool thing he did in commemoration of this and not necessarily for this. Like everyone who bought a pack got one of these NFTs. People were also able to buy some other NFTs. So I think that was just a cool add-on that he wanted to try to do. But like worth noting, Logan Paul started the whole YouTube boxing trend, potentially, at least according to Mike Tyson, revitalized the sport of boxing for a younger generation, was the first person to do this kind of big YouTuber to do this live box break on YouTube and live stream it to hundreds of thousands of fans. Then was the first big YouTuber to get into this NFT trend. And then like it's a big, huge trend to get on the cap tables of different companies. Logan Paul did that in Golden Auctions and then probably immediately increased the value of his investment by having the CEO of Golden Auctions on his live box break and use Golden Auctions as the platform for which he auctioned off all of these packs.
You can argue with none of that. It's impressive. God bless Jeff Levin, his manager, who has been through with him throughout. If I believe they're still together, right? Did they break up or they're still together? They're still together, right?
I don't know the nature personal relationship, but yes, from my understanding,
it's
still together.
It's his business relationship. It's not his personal. No, the point is, I mean, I just look at somebody like that and it's like, I think the difference between him and people like me is like, well, number one, not being Jewish, because I just feel like there's a level of not giving any F's at all. And like, I just feel like there's no shame.
And you're equating this to Judaism? How much?
Yes,
how many generations of Jewish guilt do you have running through your veins?
Oh, this is my point. Like centuries. And I just feel like there's somebody like him who can just bounce back from like, you know, scandal and this and that and just try and do and start. And who cares? Like, I'm just going to do all the things. Doesn't have any of that sort of like weighing on him that, you know. And so it is impressive. It's, you know, I'm not necessarily aligned with all of these decisions in terms of like, regardless of how much money they've made. I think there's some moral implications to some of it, but like, you can't, it's like these, no, from a business standpoint, it's impressive.
It's impressive. It's innovative. It's cool. And I thought the first portion of this podcast was going to be about Logan Paul, but I think it's a little bit more about Lauren Schnipper now.
As it should be, as it always is.
We have to dive into this, maybe not during this episode, and maybe off camera and off mic, but about this Jewish guilt you're hanging over, because maybe it's for you, Lauren. I think it might be a crutch.
Check us on Clubhouse Fridays. We're doing Clubhouse on Fridays. We'll talk all about it. But more importantly, switching gears really quickly before we get to bigger stories, is that my homework I did not forget was to download Dispo and like play with it. And I'll have you know, I downloaded it and you've still not invited me. And so I still haven't played with it. And then you said to me, you can just do it. You don't need an invitation. And that is not true. At least for me. So I still have not played with Dispo.
Lauren, we'll get you on Dispo. And then this is just all a prolonged tease for when you eventually get on Dispo. And then compare it to Instagram from being one of the, what, first 100 employees in Instagram? First what?
In the first couple hundred.
In the first couple hundred employees at Instagram running their creator program. What you see as the opportunities with Dispo, I think, is something audiences are going to be very interested to hear.
Oh, of course. The audiences are flocking for that. All right. Speaking of new things audience are flocking to, let's talk about Clubhouse. Speaking of Clubhouse also. So this is fascinating. I mean, I have so many thoughts about what's going on with Clubhouse. But first of all, audio creators are here. We're here. We're not going anywhere. Something called the Audio Collective was launched this week. And so what they are a hybrid live audio creator community, production house, and ambassador group. We help individuals and organizations expand their impact on and off Clubhouse. Fantastic article in New York Times about this week, which is this booming of sort of Clubhouse specific, audio specific kind of creator collectives. There's even a new talent and brand agency called Agency that's cropped up for just Clubhouse creators. What I just think is fascinating about this in so many levels is this has happened in 5 minutes. Like, do you know how many years it took for like our industry of video creators to get any sort of legitimacy, respect in this industry? And now it's just like, let's go. Everybody's going all in. I'll have you know also, as I was on the Audio Collective website, they have, I don't know, it looks about 2-3 dozen members, founding members. One of them is a buddy of mine from college named Jason Steinhauer, whom I cast in a play in college, who's still a friend of mine. I had lunch with him a few years ago at Facebook. He's a historian. He's such a smart guy. I'm very excited. He doesn't know this yet, but we're going to either have him on the podcast or something soon, maybe Clubhouse. But this is fascinating. What do you think about all this, Josh?
I think embracing creators right now is just table stakes for any of these platforms. Like you said, it took 5 minutes, not really 5 minutes, like 5 months, but they're getting into this very early on. And I think it makes sense for them. They've seen what happens to other platforms that don't embrace their creators from the start and that don't really cherish that relationship and the value that creators have brought to the platform. That hasn't happened with any platform, really, except for YouTube. I don't think YouTube gets enough credit for this, but back in 2011 or whatever, they first launched their partner program where they were paying creators and developing this creator team and purchased new networks, acquired new networks.
Well, but you're talking about Clubhouse embracing creators, which is a different thing. I'm talking about just like managers, management companies based on Clubhouse and collectives in Clubhouse. But Clubhouse specifically, separately, is also really embracing creators.
Right. So they're embracing creators. They have this creator initiative, this creator partner program initiative that they're developing that they've rolled out to 40 some odd creators who are part of it. And we'll see how that evolves. But yeah, then there's all these other entities that are evolving really to be early contenders in who's going to, I think, be big players in this audio influencer movement. And I think just that, like you said, that speaks to how far our industry has come and what kind of value people are placing on creators nowadays. And I was talking about the interest of platforms in creators as an example of that. So it's table stakes for platforms right now. And that's exemplative of this larger trend that's happening of really valuing the creator economy and the participants in it. And now there's individuals that are forming these collectives, these groups, these management companies, these whatever, to really take advantage of this audio boom. Here's my question about this. Audio creators, is it a thing? I mean, I think if you lump podcasting into that, 100%. But like, I feel like Clubhouse is just a little bit too early to definitively say, hey, audio is this big boom now, and there are creators that are going to be able to make a living from this platform. Because that's the denotation for me, really, is like, can a creator come onto this platform, come onto this medium, and make a living from it or supplement their income in a very meaningful way? So Clubhouse could be cool. It could be another distribution mechanism for these different creators. But I'm wondering if there's really going to be creators that break out on the platform and they are able to make a living from it. And also, the next kind of evolution of that is there this thriving middle class on the platform? So you could say different platforms that do that right now. YouTube, obviously, there's this upper echelon of creators that are making millions of dollars a year, if not millions of dollars a month from their YouTube channels. There's also this thriving middle class where people are making $50,000 a year, the several hundred thousand dollars a year. And these small businesses that have developed around these creators that are employing tens of thousands of people worldwide, hundreds of thousands of people worldwide. On Instagram, that happens too, where there's this thriving middle class of creators. I haven't really seen it occur on other platforms yet, and I just don't know if it's going to happen on Clubhouse anytime soon.
Well, I think you know, just talking about like, can creators make money here? And that's sort of like the gold standard. Like, you know, is audio a thing? I 100% think audio is a thing. I think, you know, we're already seeing, we'll get to that in a minute, other platforms, you know, really, you know, sort of like leaning in this direction. When I was at Facebook, I was obviously a huge proponent of podcasts. We did not have an audio only product. And so the only thing I could really do with podcasters was like, have them go live or this is where you would premiere the video version of your podcast. And it definitely was limiting, but video was the only focus then. I've always been a huge audiophile. I think this is such a thing. The question is, or the problem that has to be solved, the solutions that need to be out there are like, if creators don't find a way, or if Clubhouse doesn't find a way to monetize these people on this platform, they will go elsewhere. There's literally, if there's no way to do it there, they will go elsewhere. So I am sure, because in the day that we're in, the dawn of where we are with creators, I'm sure they've already said they're working on those kind of solutions. And there's just very obvious things they could do right away. I mean, you could pay a dollar to get into, you know, your favorite Clubhouse group, you know, whatever, a subscription. There's a million ways that you can do it. I'm also just, what I like about this too, and this is what I've said about Clubhouse from day one, is that the benefit, the good thing for me that I like about it is like, I feel like it's a better use of my time than necessarily like scrolling on Instagram. You know, I mean, the fact that like my buddy who's in this collective is literally like a historian, like a renowned historian, and he's a creator. I mean, how cool is that? Like, he's an edu creator, and I like love that. And I think there's been such a need for platforms and products to support those kinds of creators. The other part that's just difficult is it's incredibly time consuming. I listen to you on a Clubhouse today, and it was like an hour of my day. So now I've now spent like 2 hours of my day with you. I mean, that's a lot.
Lucky individual.
It's a lot.
Yeah, I think Clubhouse in its most ideal form is a conference without the opportunity cost, or the very low opportunity cost, because you get access to hear people who are at the top of their fields, either bullshitting with other individuals at the top of their fields or talking in a panel format about something that they're really passionate about, where it's a very low effort. It's a low bar for them to do that. They don't have to get dressed up. They don't have to fly somewhere. They don't have to prep in the green room. They can do it from their pajamas, in their living room, in their couch, in their bathroom, wherever, and speak to hundreds, if not thousands of people about things that they're...
I mean, it's a dream.
That they love, right?
Doing it from my bed? Are you kidding me? It's a dream. It's a dream.
And so I see the appeal there. And also during that Clubhouse that you were speaking of, Rich Greenfield came up on stage and he was talking about he really sees the benefit of audio being something that can fill in the white spaces of your day, because it's still a passive experience that you can do while you're doing something else. You don't have to actively be engaged with it, looking at it all the time.
That's why we do it when we commute. That's when I do, you know, I mean, that's why I listen to podcasts. Is now I don't commute, but when I walk the dog is when I listen to my podcast. So, you know, but the other night I was starting to cook dinner and I had my clubhouse notification came on, and a friend of mine was doing, my friend Kim Norton, who is the president of Telly, another interesting product for creators, that she was doing she was in a room talking about what she's doing in creators and everything. And so, I think it's interesting because I think on paper, if you look at Clubhouse, is this a feature or a product? And it feels like a feature. It's something that any of these other platforms could just add on. It really isn't that heavy of a lift. But I think that it just found a moment. And I think that if they continue, as you said, to support creators and very quickly start giving them options to not only like monetize, but to expand their audiences, figure out better discovery and all that sort of stuff, I think it's got real, I think it's got real legs.
Right. So if they give creators conference like monetization opportunities, you have to pay for tickets, you have to pay for subscriptions, there could be a brand sponsor that's at the top of the Clubhouse, things like that, I think could be really cool. Yeah. We'll just see what kind of appetite there is for that, and if creators are able to make a meaningful income, and then if there's this healthy kind of middle class of creators that evolves too.
Speaking of Clubhouse platforms copying, Instagram launched the new 4-person live rooms. Now, this is still video, but now you're able to, instead of just go live with one person, you can go live with up to 3, making total 4 people in a live room. So Instagram, they hope that rooms will open up more creative opportunities for users and allow them to start talk show, host jam sessions, or co-create with other artists, hosting more engaging Q&As or tutorials with your following, or just hang out with more of your friends. So you also can, they have ways in which you can monetize this. So you can purchase badges for your favorite creators to show your love. You can buy badges for the host. You can have other interactive features like shopping or live fundraisers. So this is, it's sort of being in the press anyway, touted as like kind of their first answer to Clubhouse. Even though it is still video, you can imagine a scenario where this could easily just become audio.
Yeah, and head of Instagram, Adam Mosseri, he was hyping this on Twitter beforehand. He said, like, check in at 8 a.m. California time tomorrow for an Instagram announcement. And then it was this. And, like, it's cool, but is this something that you would expect the head of Instagram to be hyping up on Twitter and promoting ahead of time?
It really doesn't feel that big. I mean, it feels big. He was doing it because of Clubhouse. Normally this is just like, oh, hey, now you can go live with 3 people instead of 1. Like, it doesn't feel that big. But also right now, I think from just a comms perspective, yeah, this is, again, the part that, like, you know, the government is going to have a hard time with Facebook. There is competition out there. And Clubhouse is the hot one. Clubhouse is the new, you know, darling, whatever you want to say. And they need to grab a headline where they can.
And to be fair, Instagram isn't the only platform trying to roll out Clubhouse impersonators. Twitter has one too called Spaces. They actually beat Clubhouse to their Android release. Twitter Spaces released to Android this week.
You're excited.
I am so excited. I'm an avid Google Pixel user. What up? But
Joshua J. Cohen is now a new Spaces influencer because he's going to be...
So yeah,
he's gonna be on there.
You can find
me
on Twitter Spaces. It's cool. I feel like there is something to the simplicity of Clubhouse and the kind of single use product or feature, whatever you want to label it as, is compelling because you go there, you know exactly what you're gonna get, and because it's singularly focused on that for now, the navigation's easy, the discovery's easy, everything's really easy about it. Twitter Spaces feels like a little bit harder to navigate and to really utilize, but that being said, if they are able to figure it out, it could be massive, because Twitter is the place right now where everyone promotes that they're going live on Clubhouse. And if Twitter could be the place where people are promoting that they're going live on Twitter, that'd be a huge boon for them.
Huge. Huge. Okay, next up, switching gears off of the audio only. Well, this is sort of audio. This is just different, not Clubhouse only audio. But Billboard, the music chart Billboard, they are now going to incorporate Facebook music video streams into their charts. And this, it's significant. So they said, we are excited to announce the inclusion of Facebook's U.S. premium music video streams to Music Connect and to Billboard's charts, including the Billboard Hot 100, Billboard 200, and Billboard Global 200, further expanding the most comprehensive view of music consumption and trends impacting. Tamara Hivernak, she's the VP of Business Development and Partnerships at Facebook on the music side. I'd never worked with her, but I know people that have. She said, artists deserve recognition in the music charts for the social capacity they drive and the social delivery they fuel. Adding music to the video plays on Facebook to the Billboard charts is an important step in the right direction. She was she touted also some high performing music videos on Facebook recently. Alicia Keys' Love Looks Better, Sam Smith, Lighthouse Keeper, and they were all boosted a lot from heavy involvement with the artists themselves, no doubt by my good friend, former work wife, Malika Kimare, who's the head of all music at Instagram and who's amazing at her job. And this is just really interesting. And so it's kind of feels like, I don't know why this hasn't happened before, because this is, you should, you know, these are the type of things where metrics are really important, and they're missing out on a huge piece of the pie if you're not including this sort of stuff in your charts.
I think it hasn't happened before because the music industry is this enormous entity that's probably incredibly difficult to cut deals with at large. But this could have a huge impact on how musicians are interacting with and treating Facebook. I mean, I know from talking to different managers, musicians really care about their YouTube numbers. They really care about their YouTube numbers because YouTube is the biggest video sharing site on the planet. They're really proud.
And I'm assuming this Billboard account those views?
Yeah, they're really proud of their YouTube videos. But Billboard also counts those towards its charts. And we're looking at the world right now where all these big musicians are like big creators. In that, if they have a direct line to their audience, they don't really need anything else. They don't need press. They don't need necessarily big brand deals. They don't need awards or accolades. If they have a medium through which they can directly connect with their audience and sell stuff directly to them, most of these big creators are set, and everything else is just kind of like icing on the cake. That being said, in a world where they can kind of have anything and do what they want, scarcity is much more coveted. And being on something like the Billboard 100 is this real estate that they can't access themselves. And so that kind of like scarce real estate, I think, is being more and more coveted by these big influencers, because it's the one thing that they can't just get through interacting with their audience. They can't be on the cover of the Hollywood Reporter. They can't be on the cover of Variety just because they have a lot of fans and are able to make a lot of dough off their fans. So that kind of like old media, scarce real estate properties, it's more and more aspirational to this growing group of musicians and creators. So I would expect a lot of them to lean into these new platforms that are helping them get that kind of old media coveted real estate. So I think we're probably going to see a lot more interaction from artists around Facebook and their Facebook pages to boost their view counts, for sure.
No, I absolutely think so. That's why this is a huge move for Facebook. It's going to be a lot easier to get musicians to do stuff on Facebook, which, you know, people used to, when I first started at my job and my family had no idea what I was doing at Facebook and Instagram, a former colleague, Sarah Wilson, said the way she describes it to her friends and family is, my job is to get celebrities to do cool shit on Facebook and Instagram. And that was really the job. And there was more nuance than that. And it's really hard to do that. It's because of all the reasons you mentioned. And so when they have things like this to incentivize them more, it will be easier to get them to do cool shit on Facebook. Next up is a creator business you should know about. It's a company called Restream, and we are going to hear from their head of influencer relations.
Let's do it.
Hi, my name is Anya Rezina, and I am head of influencer marketing at Restream. Restream allows you to create beautiful and engaging live videos directly from your browser and stream them to all social channels like YouTube, Facebook, or LinkedIn at the same time. Restream started as a multi-streaming solution for gamers, allowing them to stream their gameplay on Twitch, YouTube, and more. Fast forward to 2020, and Restream became a true video marketing tool that allows you to build interactive video experiences such as live Q&A sessions, product launches, flash sales, or interviews with experts. The World Health Organization used Restream to broadcast its famous One World at Home concert, featuring creators like Lady Gaga and Paul McCartney. Also, Joe Biden's presidential campaign used Restream to connect with their voters in real time during the election year. If you want to learn more, check out Restream.io or find me on LinkedIn as Anya Rezina to connect and chat about everything related to live video.
Awesome. Please go check them out. We love supporting businesses in our ecosystem.
Super interesting. And if you are part of a business that we should feature in this segment of Creator Upload, or you know of a business we should feature in this segment of Creator Upload, hit us up at creatoruploadpod@gmail.com.
Josh, uploads, downloads.
Lauren, bit of an upload. Clubhouse Media. Now, to be clear, this is different from the Clubhouse you and I talked about before. Clubhouse Media, according to their boilerplate, represents the future of influencer media and marketing with a global network of professionally run content houses, each of which has its own brand, influencer cohort, and production capabilities. So basically, an aggregator of all of these different kinds of influencer content networks and houses. They're an over-the-counter, publicly traded stock, and they released a press release which said they have announced a fully executed letter of intent to acquire top global meme account, picking up seven-figure net income and 1 billion monthly impressions. And the acquisition target is the Tinder blog. You can find them at instagram.com/thetinderblog. And the Tinder blog boasts over 4.2 million followers accrued over its six-year existence and has an annual net income in excess of $1 million on more than 1 billion web impressions per month. What I think is wild about this is we're reading from a press release that was sent by a publicly traded company about an Instagram meme account it intends to acquire.
Which part of that is specifically crazy to you?
Everything.
Okay.
All components of that.
Great.
I mean, it's wild. These Instagram meme accounts are obviously a big deal. They don't have a creator name attached to them, so maybe they don't get as much play or as much hype as other equally influential Instagram accounts, but they're obviously making a lot of dough. And I mean, you were at Instagram. What was your take internally on these meme accounts when you were there? And how do you think Instagram feels about all of them?
Not great. It wasn't great at the time. The whole goal is it is sort of new content, but more than that, it was like they were stealing content. So there were tons of IP violations. Like, what's his name was the biggest perpetrator of this?
Fat Jewish.
And so it just wasn't ever it's not even about repurposing content. It's usually about seen as negative. It's more about it being stolen content, it being spammy seeming, and just feels like it's gaming the whatever algorithm. So they weren't necessarily like, I think it's, they weren't necessarily looked highly upon, but I think it's a little bit of a different day now, because I think there are just a ton out there. And if they're doing it right, I think Instagram's kind of okay with it.
Yeah, F-U-C-K Jerry got a lot of flack after the Firefest documentary, which I think when they were in it, they thought it might portray them in a positive light, and it 100% did not. And then after that, I think it came to a head with all of these different comedians and people who had their content stolen by these different meme accounts were coming forward and saying this was super messed up. And then everyone kind of changed their tune after that. So it might be a new day, a new morning for meme accounts on Instagram.
I think it is a little bit, but we shall see. Evidently, if somebody's going to buy one for this much. Okay, Josh, I think that's all we got.
Lauren, I think we did it. I'll see you in a press release from a publicly traded company announcing the acquisition of Creator Upload.
On Clubhouse.
And if not there, next week on Creator Upload. Today's show is produced by Lauren Schnipper and me, Joshua Cohen. Original music is by London Bridge. You can check him out on Instagram at London Bridge Music. Make sure you subscribe to Creator Upload on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a comment there too. Give us a rating. It means a lot. We dig it. We're thankful if you do it. If you want to hit us up, you can email us at creatoruploadpod@gmail.com. And if you like our show, please recommend it to a friend. If you love our show, recommend it to all of your friends. Thank you for listening to Creator Upload, and we will be back next week.